the lid's off the cookie jar.
Hi, I'm Christine Bruce, broadcasting on Wet'suwet'en territory through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. As many of you know, I was the Northern Research Associate on behalf of the BC Association of Farmers Markets this summer. It was one of those dream jobs where you spend the summer visiting farmers markets across Northern BC, taking surveys and asking people about their market experiences. I learned so much about markets, how people view local food, sustainability, many meaningful topics. I also met lots of farmers and market managers, all of whom have my eternal respect for their hard work and for their philosophies on feeding people well, while carefully supporting the land and its needs. In case you're wondering, yes, it's Dave Connell who's the mastermind behind these surveys. And for the next two episodes, Dave and I are going to talk about what we've learned through the data and what we're noticing through anecdotes. Dr. David Connell is a professor at UNBC, whose particular interests include agricultural planning and farmland protection, local food systems, and the quest for community. Dave has been partnering with the BC Association of Farmers Markets to create, measure, and analyze this Farmers Markets Benefit Study. The BC Association of Farmers Markets is a registered BC society whose mission is to support, develop, and promote farmers markets in British Columbia. This summer, we learned a lot about farmers markets across BC, and Dave Connell is here to tell us how that was accomplished. I need to start with a couple of apologies. Usually I welcome people to the cookie jar before we launch into our discussion, or at least ask how they're doing. Forgive us, but Dave and I got past the niceties too quickly for this recording. And if you're hearing funny little noises in the background, it's my six foster cats who refuse to take a nap during the day now.
There are a lot of people who think they know about food security in BC, but you've got statistics to back up what you're saying. I mean, I thought I knew all about farmers markets until I did these surveys this summer, and there were things that I had never seen before.
I mean, it's the beauty of research, and I guess if I can say so, it's the beauty of doing good research in terms of you get good information.
Well, I think also I was married to someone who took a stats course, and he said, you know, you can make statistics say anything you want. So you have to be really careful when you read a research report, because they may have fudge the statistics a little bit. I'm not sensing that we're doing that here. I mean, the statistics are pretty clear.
Yeah, there's statistics are clear. There's always compromises when you ask questions, and it involves the question itself, the format of the question, so the wording of the question, the formatting of the question, the type, the means by which you're asking the questions. So with the DOT surveys, we are limited to five questions, and we have to force people into the categories that we pick because it has to fit on the flip chart. So there's always compromises between accuracy and precision in terms of the typical answer is, or example is, if you ask someone their age, you could say, are you middle-aged? And you can probably guess the right answer. It's not very accurate, but it's not precise, but it's accurate. Yeah. But if you were to guess their age, you might say 40s, or you might say 45 or 45 in 6 months. So there's always a trade-off in terms of how precise do you need the data versus aiming for where you always want accuracy. But to get accurate, you may have to give up some level of detail. So definitely with the DOT survey, we give up certain levels of detail. And we do a low-tech approach as well, especially for the crowd counts. So
right.
Yeah. But there's most of the questions probably center on the crowd counts.
I suppose you could also be asking questions with a slant that gives you the answer you're looking for too, couldn't you?
Oh, definitely. There's studies have shown how you can purposely, deliberately select words in a question and people will respond one way or another. One is around, it just as an example, not food related, but is around the use of the word welfare versus social assistance. And yeah, depending on if you want to gain support, you want answers that are offer more support, you'll choose social assistance. And if you want your research wants to demonstrate there's lower levels of support, you would choose the word welfare.
Interesting. Well, Dave, I have to say this summer, I was more proud to represent the work of a single person than ever before. because at nearly every market, someone would approach and ask if it was you behind these surveys. So thank you for building such a great brand on everyone's behalf.
It's been my pleasure.
You must be very proud of this work after doing three sets of surveys and having this response from people, eh, that they're so supportive of it.
Yeah, and yeah, it was 2006, 2012, and to have it come up again 11 years later, that was a treat for sure.
I met a lot of your past students. It's pretty funny that I feel like I've almost been in one of your classes because I've met so many students.
Well, let's give credit to UNBC for getting qualifying students and encouraging them to stay in the North. Not all of them come from the North, so a lot of them are positioned in different jobs around the North.
That's true. UNBC does deserve some credit for that. I want to start with something really pedestrian. Will you define what you mean by a farmer's market, please?
Yeah, there are some standard definitions, but just at a general level, I think it's helpful to identify farmers markets as different from a public market, as different from a flea market. So not that any one of those terms has a specific definition, but we certainly have expectations associated with each of those terms. So for me, at least my expectations are that a flea market tends to be discount products, some secondhand goods that are being sold. It's where you just want to go to get something pretty darn cheap and have fun browsing around.
Like a garage Probably, sale.
Yeah, like a big garage sale. Yeah. Everyone's backyard or everyone's garage comes right together. And a public market is a step up from that. I would describe that as an informal shopping area. It can be a wide range of goods, but it's not the purpose is not to promote food or agriculture. And that leads us to a farmer's market, which shares some, depending on the farmer's market one attends, it certainly shares some characteristics with a public market and with maybe a flea market. But a farmer's market, to distinguish it from the other two, clearly have the intent to sell, promote food and agriculture.
And I would think that would be the primary reason that people will come. They want to come for other things, but they're primarily coming for food to a farmer's market, right?
Exactly, yes.
Okay. So in 2006, you approached BC Association of Farmers Markets to see if they'd be willing to participate in a series of research surveys to understand the effect of a farmer's market on a local economy. What made you decide to set up these surveys?
My interests, both personally and professionally, is to support local food systems. And to me, farmers markets, I like to describe them as the most visible and most accessible entry point for local food systems. And I mean that for the general population. If they want to seek out local food, the best place to go, the most obvious place to go is the farmers market. You can also go to the grocery store, but definitely farmers markets, you know, it is definitely local, not just provincial, for example. So in that sense, I do see farmers markets as essential ways to connect with our local foods, with our local farmers. And that also connects to the land as well, because we know where the farmers are located and have a sense of where explicitly where our food comes from. So I do value farmers markets for the role they play within local food systems and then the possibility of just making our world a better place by supporting local food systems. So I wanted to showcase the value of farmers markets and demonstrate their value to others, and especially to politicians. Farmers markets do well on their own, but if they can get support from the local government, I think that's even better. And knowing that, or wanting to get the politicians' attention, I know that they are very interested in numbers, and especially when those numbers have dollar signs beside them. So numbers and dollars, politicians, it catches their attention, but it's also things they like to talk about. So that was my interest in farmers markets. It was my interest why I attended this workshop. I saw it organized by Oregon State University, and it was a workshop about how to use this method that they developed to assess the economic benefits of farmers markets. Really fantastic. We had the chance to go to a farmers market and see their method in action. They called it the rapid market assessment. But I left that workshop and I was thinking that their method is premised on doing assessment at a single farmers market. And I came back, and it was from Oregon where the conference was at. I came back thinking that I think I can do this on a province-wide level. And so that's when I approached the BC Association of Farmers Markets, as well as the Ministry of Agriculture. And I was really delighted to get a positive response, even a very positive response from both of them. And that's why I want to set it up, but it's also how it got started in 2006.
You did the 2006 series of surveys yourself with one or two assistants, didn't you? Like, I don't know, I can't even begin to fathom that, because we had so many markets to do this summer, and it was almost overwhelming for me to do the 12 that I did.
Well, there's two people who did the field work. Plus, I did some field work, and another person did some field work as well. But the two primary, I mean, I wouldn't call them brave souls. It was they had a lot of fun. They had a lot of fun. So, yeah, ignorance is good in terms of I was still brand new to BC from Ontario. And I remember the names of markets were popping up, and I'd ask where they're located, or like which town are they located in. And I constantly, Teresa, who was the kind of coordinating it for me, she would point out where they were located. So it was a fantastic way for me to learn about where BC is. But I must say that I really didn't have a good sense of how far, how big BC was at that first year.
Yeah.
But the Adam and Kyle were the two, they were undergraduate students who did most of the field work. And they just, they were driven by certainly doing good research, but also just they knew they were going to enjoy their summer doing this. And they did what it took to make it happen. And I've, yeah, a lot of credit for them to overcoming literally the distances that were required to be traveled between markets.
Yeah, being the Northern Research Associate, I mean, that was the biggest challenge, is getting from one market to the next, because it's hours and hours of driving.
Yeah.
Do I know where you're from?
I grew up in the Toronto region, in the suburbs of Toronto.
Oh, I spent 11 years in Toronto. It's a great city. Which
it is.
Are you in?
Mississauga.
Okay. Yeah, I was there for summer.
Cool. Okay.
I'm always surprised when I find that I've got another something else that we've got in common.
Yeah, there's certainly enough Ontarians and people in BC from other provinces.
Yeah. And Ontario was bigger than BC, but people don't tend to drive all over Ontario like they do BC.
Yeah, it's like two provinces. There's Southern Ontario.
Yeah.
And then there's Northern Ontario.
Yeah, that's my experience too.
Mm-hmm.
But BC people drive all over the place here.
Yeah, and that's that's what I learned when I arrived.
Okay, so scientifically, there are a few parameters that have to be maintained to get reasonable statistics, two of those being location and size. And here we go. Since BC is such a big province, it had to be split into four regions. And even then, we had challenges collecting all the stats.
Exactly. Yeah, BC, it's big. So that presents challenges just in and of itself. Big in the sense of it's rural, so there's great distances between places. But there's also, across Canada, among all the provinces, BC is the most diverse in terms of its landscape. So you just drive an hour and you are literally in a different landscape. And that landscape leads to diverse agricultural regions. And those are characterized by different seasons, different lengths of growing seasons, different quality of soils as well. So there's certainly the size, the distance required to travel the province, but there are unique characteristics of each region, which then kind of dictate the prospects for a farmer's market and what can be grown in that region. So those are factors. That's why we really paid attention this year anyways. We haven't, in the previous studies, we did not pay attention to regions, but for this study in 2023, we increased the number of assessments from 35 to 70. So we doubled the number of assessments we completed, and that provided us with this valuable opportunity to then look at results by region. So certainly the size, regional differences, size of the province, but also what we've found in terms of, if we want to get reasonable statistics, we also have to pay attention to the size of the markets as well. So all of that led to, once we had committed to doing 70 markets, we had to, academic term, research term is sampling, in terms of which markets are we going to work with? And it was more of a quota system where we set up criteria by both size and region, and then we had targets. So within one particular region, we knew based on the BC Association of Farmers Markets membership list, we saw the list by region, but we identified them by size. So we knew that in any particular region, how many markets were of this size, or of that size. And then we did a percentage of each size within each region. So we had this framework in which we, that was our target. And we knew we would, if we reached our expected numbers by region, by size, we knew we would have a representative sample. So that's what our, how we approached this. And we were very close in the end to getting that representation that we were hoping for. And then the next step to address the size of the province was to, some regions have far more markets and a lot more markets, Lower Mainland. So we had two people down there, but they didn't travel, have to travel this far, but there's a lot more farmers markets down there versus the work that you did up in the north, where you may have done less markets, but it required much more travel. So we, our staffing complement reflected the size of the province, the number of markets in each region as well.
You were talking about the size of the markets. We did training at Trout Lake, which is enormous compared to anything I saw up here. I had a few markets that were 10 vendors and less, but Trout Lake, I can't remember how many, but I almost felt unlimited, the number of vendors that they had. And we have a shorter growing season and less population to draw from. And again, the distance to travel, we have distribution challenges, but Trout Lake, they have everything down there. You could literally buy all of your groceries at the market, everything that you're going to need for the week, and then go home. I was really jealous.
Trout Lake's fantastic. There's a lot of farmers markets that, they're really impressive compared to some of the markets we have here in the north, for sure.
Although, by the end of the summer, I was probably more impressed with the smaller markets than the big ones. There were a lot of reasons that I was very proud of my small markets, because they had a lot of challenges that the bigger markets probably don't ever see. You can always replace one vendor with another there, right? We can't do that up here.
Markets in Lower Mainland, there's certainly competition to get into those, in terms of they have farmers who are on a waiting list to sell at the market. But yeah, the smaller markets, you're hoping that additional farmers show up and ask to start selling at the market, just as a general rule anyways.
Another thing that I saw a fair bit of this summer, but I have seen it a little bit in past, is where somebody comes, they're a tiny little project, they set up a table and they become popular, they do very well. And within, we had one this summer, a coffee cart that started up tiny, and they have now gone into a permanent storefront and they no longer sell at the market because they've got their own business. So that's a huge success for them, but of course a loss for the market. But I mean, I love that we feed into our community.
Yeah, the idea of farmers markets being incubators for small businesses is well recognized, and it is one of the benefits, and I guess the value of having a farmers market does provide those incubation opportunities to develop a product and then scale up and move on to other locations. It tends to happen with more of the processed foods on that side rather than farmers. The farmers, well, they might diversify their chains, their value chain in terms of which outlets they sell to, grocery stores and everything else. So they may not open a storefront, but they might reach the point where it, rather than sell it as a farmer's market, it might actually be more advantageous for them to get into larger distribution system.
That's exactly right. And really, again, beneficial to both sides. The only one that really loses out is the farmer's market. But if there are other farmers or vendors who want to get in there, then we've freed up a space for them. So the other thing that you mentioned was size, the parameter that I find this more interesting than any of the others. I think you said you had four market sizes with your surveys. Is that right?
Yes, small, medium, large, and extra large. And that's based on the number of vendors per market.
Okay. And, as a research associate, by the end of it, I was really glad that I didn't have to do the extra large ones, because it's overwhelming. I mean, there's so many things that you just have to juggle with an extra large or even a large market.
Yeah, and from our perspective, from the research perspective, size is one of the most important factors. From a researcher perspective, certainly much of your comments, your think about it, if I might say fairly, is from the shopper's perspective, in terms of shoppers have different experiences in the size of the market, mostly reflecting the number of vendors, which means the selection of products. But from a research point of view, size is very important. We learned that early on back in 2006. So in addition to affecting selection, it also affects the amount spent by customers. That was something we learned that was important in terms of back in 2006. So size is important for a number of reasons, but it's really essential for this project in terms of trying to estimate the number of, well, the economic benefits of all the farmers markets in BC.
That's interesting. I wonder if I do that, if I go to a larger market, spend more money. And I'm not really conscious of doing it.
Yeah, it shows up pretty consistently in the statistics. So it appears to be, I guess there's a number of ways of thinking about it, but it's ones, even if you know it's a small market, you've been there before, you just don't know if the products that you bought last time are going to be there. So you have expectations before arriving about how much or what you're going to buy, what you're going to spend. And that would depend on if you already went grocery shopping, then you might be just adding to your basket rather than doing your full shopping if it's a smaller market.
You've been doing these surveys for a while now, as we've said, and this is the third time the survey data has been collected in BC. What did you learn in the previous two collections?
And I come back to what I just said, is that, yeah, the importance of size, it really did surprise me that there were significant differences about how much was spent by customers based on size of market. And as we just did, if you think about it, probably does make sense, but I was still surprised by that there were differences and they were quite significant. So that was one thing, important thing that was learned. As part of this study, we also have surveys with businesses that are located nearby markets. And part of the inspiration was doing that was there's often the stereotype is that local businesses, well, it can go from extreme to extreme in terms of they don't like the market because all the parking areas are congested and taken up. So their loyal customers can't come that day. That would be on the negative side. And that's kind of just the stereotypical negative. And then there's the positive side where you have drop-in visitors. So people are coming to the area of the market and then doing additional shopping while they're in that particular area on that particular street. So what we learned from the early studies, and it's been quite consistent, is the overwhelmingly positive support that adjacent businesses, as in those businesses located within visual sight, within walking distance of a market, how positive they are in terms of their support for farmers markets. So that was the second item that learned from the previous markets. Again, we can guess about these things, but to see the actual numbers and see them in the chart form and just how visually obvious it is that in terms of this overwhelming support. So that's another one, I guess, just from a methods point of view in terms of how to do a better survey. There's lots of things we learned about the methods in 2006 made 2012 better. And then we did 2012 and learned from that. And then we've made 2023 better. So there's a lot of smaller details that go into the learning package that I've carried forward from one to the next. We do also do a one-on-one survey with shoppers. And that gives me, and this is more of the kind of the pure academic talking. So the shopper surveys are more for academic purposes, whereas before I talked about the dot surveys, but looking at the dollars, the numbers we collect around dollars in terms of how much shoppers spend. And we also try to figure out how many shoppers there are. But from this one-on-one survey, we learn more about the shoppers themselves. And we learn about levels of loyalty. And what we found, for example, that shoppers who are more loyal, they're the kind of the most important factors they consider when purchasing food are different from those who shop less often at a farmer's market. Intuitively, again, that makes sense. But to see it in the results from an academic, from a research point of view, it's really interesting. And I guess another thing that we found, which surprised me, was that from the shopper survey, we do ask about age and we ask about income. And I was surprised that although they skew towards higher income and skew towards older people, the general profile of farmers market shoppers is more diverse than I think this the kind of the stereotypical criticism of markets are. It's not purely middle income and middle aged. So the profile shows that there's a pretty good distribution across both income and age among shoppers. So those are a few things that we've learned from the previous two assessment projects.
You know, those are all things that I found myself learning over this summer. As I said earlier, I've been on boards, I've been a volunteer, I've been a dedicated shopper for years and years at farmers markets. And you think you've seen everything, but this summer, you're right. I mean, you say you were surprised to discover these things. That's reassuring for me, because I was really surprised that a lot of it is intuitive, but I didn't see it. I mean, there are assumptions that we all make about farmers markets. And one of the things I was thinking while you were talking was, I wonder whether that diversity of shoppers and incomes has changed at all over the course of the years, you know, because where do farmers markets come from originally? And is it the same sort of people that would originally have wanted a farmers market? Has our society changed in its assumptions about farmers markets and in our requirements that a farmers market have, you know, the demands that we make on it? I'm fascinated with that kind of thing. I like to know how society is operating and what sort of paths they've taken to get there.
Yeah, I agree. I share that kind of fascination. And one thing we found this year, right from the start, is pandemic had a major impact on farmers markets. Farmers markets were shut down for a while, but some of the effects are still lingering. That's more anecdotal at this point in terms of things we heard while completing the assessments. It'll take the full analysis to see the size of the effect, but certainly there are open questions in terms of what do the number of shoppers look like in 2023 compared to the past 2 or 3 years, but then relative to the pandemic years, certainly they should be up, and it's in that recovery phase. So I guess to phrase it, it's the question would be, has it recovered? Is it back to the days prior to the pandemic? We won't be able to answer that directly, but there may be evidence within the numbers we did collect to get a better insight in terms of the effects of the pandemic. But another broad societal change, kind of you were wondering about and saying it fascinates you, I would say that I'll back up and say the last one we did was in 2012, and 11 years is a long time when it comes to food, in part because we've seen over the past 20 years a significant upsurge in a significant surge in the interest in food systems and interest in the quality of the food we eat, but primarily for health reasons. But our food has the position of food. It was taken for granted for a long time. And over the past 20 years, we've seen that change. But over the past, just the past few years, I think that has continued. And so what I would expect in terms of societal change that you were alluding to, I think if we're going back to the profile of shoppers in terms of income and age, and I suspect that whereas farmers markets, let's say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, might have been seen as a more of a treat, more of a privilege for those who had money to spend because things were perceived to be more expensive at farmers markets, I just think that just generally the acceptance or interest in local food and therefore farmers markets has become more generally accepted and spread out among a wider population. So I suspect, I haven't seen the numbers yet, but I'm curious now, talking out loud now, whether it will show up in the profile of shoppers that we interviewed.
And if there's a listener-supported radio station, it means that people can get daily, every day,
a different way of looking at the world, not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
If top quality, locally sourced food is important to you, then Smithers is the place to be. In our town, there are many options for finding healthy, local food. Looking for a coffee shop? How about Bugwood Coffee, where friends gather for locally roasted coffee and baked goods at 1206 Main Street? Or Mountain Eagle Books, a used bookstore and cappuccino bar. Mountain Eagle on 3rd Avenue is a great place to lose yourself in a book and a coffee. Want to make it yourself? Visit Nature's Pantry on 1st Avenue, a health food store with an excellent selection of natural foods. And no town is complete without a farmer's market. The BV Farmer's Market offers fresh local produce and meats, craft beers and baked goods, artisan and craftwares, all made, baked, or grown locally. While the market is now closed for the winter, many of the vendors and farmers continue to offer products and services around town. Thank you to our sponsors, Bugwood Coffee, Mountain Eagle Books, Nature's Pantry, and the BV Farmer's Market. Food for body and soul, just like the cookie jar. You've got your hand in the cookie jar on CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. And today, that's a very good thing. Who can argue with nutritious, beautiful local food? I'm your host, Christine Bruce. Before the break, UNBC's Dr. Dave Connell joined me to talk about how this summer's BC Association of Farmers Markets benefit study was accomplished and some of the things he learned from the previous two surveys done in 2006 and 2012. Now, more on what we're learning about farmers markets in BC through both the survey data and anecdotal information, and then some of the reasoning behind the four questions we asked at virtually every market this summer.
One of the vendors at my market, I was talking to her at another market, and she had taken the long survey, and she said, you know, I have a real bone to pick with how people perceive the prices that we impose on the food that we sell. She believes that farmers are not paid nearly well enough. I agree with her. But the argument is always, well, it's a lot more expensive than the prices in the local grocery stores. And she did a little bit of research of her own. And the organic food is far more expensive than anything you'll find at a farmer's market, at a grocery store. So that understanding is not correct. You may be able to buy regular carrots for cheaper. So the price of a regular carrot at a Safeway is the lowest. The price of a carrot at a farmer's market is higher. And the price of an organic carrot at a grocery store, at a Safeway, is substantially higher again. So I think she's right. I think that our local farmers, if you value the food as much as our statistics are beginning to demonstrate, then you should see the value within the prices that you're paying. We should be paying our farmers more.
Yeah, I agree on those points. From the farmers markets, farmers, that's certainly, it's a challenging livelihood. And yeah, it is a struggle, especially for the new farmers. It's that's a major challenge as well to recoup those costs. But I think there has been a change. In the past couple of years with this inflation of food, especially in grocery stores, it's possible that farmers over the past couple of years have not raised their prices. They're just not as price sensitive. And they're more concerned about their customer reactions to price increases than a grocery store would be. Yeah. So I believe that certainly historically farmers markets were definitely, the perception is that they were, and the reality probably was that it was more expensive. It does vary by product. So I agree with you on that account, but I think that relationship may have changed just over the last couple of years. It'd be interesting to learn more about that.
Well, my own market has, I've had several people approach me at our market. I don't sell there, but I often go and sit with some of the vendors because I've become such good friends with them. And people will approach and say, boy, this market is so vibrant. It's changed. It's grown. It's developed over the last 5 years. And everyone seems very impressed with the success of it. But that in itself demonstrates what we're talking about, that farmers markets are more valued these days. And that may have been the direct result of the pandemic.
That was a challenging period. And I do know in the markets that I've visited, there definitely is, well, I've been shopping in the markets in this area long enough that I've seen some of the older farmers retire. And I have seen new farmers come in and fill that spot. And it's just fantastic to see. It is a really good sign, both for farmers markets, local food, but just for all of us. I'll just add a part before you mentioned previously about value. And yeah, the general interest in our local food does also reflect how much we care about food. And you use the word value, and we can look at value strictly in terms of price, but what the farmer's market product cannot compare in terms of, it overwhelms the quality of food that's sold in a grocery store, because it's going to be fresh, picked right away. We just, from a nutritional point of view, if we consider price and quality primarily, not just how it looks and how pretty it is, but if we consider the nutritional value and its freshness, then we don't have metrics to actually put numbers on those, but if we could measure quality of the product, it would make farmers market produce so much cheaper compared to what one gets at a grocery store.
Are you ready yet to give even a generic idea of what you learned from this year's surveys in comparison with the other two?
Difficult question. Am I ready? I guess I can only guess at this point in time. We have not seen the results. So most of my comments around differences, some of them I've mentioned already, and which messed things up in terms of, I probably had expectations, but once I thought it through, like the impacts and effects of the COVID pandemic, it's changed my outlook in terms of what are the effects on crowd counts? How are they up or down? I had the assumption that it would be maybe even the same as before. There's more markets now. I think individual markets have gotten, on average, they've increased in size. But that doesn't necessarily translate into more customers. I would say I'm not ready, because I'm actually, the more I think about it, the less certain I am about what my expectations were at the front end and what the results might show.
Okay, fair enough. I thought it was a really interesting statistic that there was such an uptake in market numbers. The fact that we got 70 and you did 35 the last time, that in my opinion, anyway, maybe this is just me being naive about the whole thing, but to see that many more markets interested in being part of taking the survey suggests that people do value markets more, that vendors are very keen to be seen, and that, you know, markets are important in BC.
Yeah, there's definitely more interest among markets to participate, but I should say that we made it easier for markets to participate. I won't go into the details, but it was easier for them to participate, and that was a really important factor in getting more markets involved in this year's study.
Fair enough. Why, this is a personal question, and I guess as a professor, you study, you do research all the time, but there must be something personal about it. Why does studying farmers markets in BC matter so much to you? I mean, I'm sensing a lot of passion in your voice.
Yeah, I think I already did it once during this interview, where it's both personal and professional. So that's one of privilege I have, to be able to combine the two and pursue both of those at the same time and have fun doing it. But at the core of my work, as well as my personal interests, is the idea of community. And when I say of community, I mean a kind of a deep sense of community, where we have a sense of belonging, we have a sense of place and a sense of being. It really is a very fulsome idea behind the community, as opposed to just thinking of that is the community of Prince George. It really is this deep sense of community that captures my interests on multiple levels. But what I've learned from learning about community and just always having a sense of pursuing community, that I've learned that growing one's own food and sharing food, especially food you've grown, both of those are really important catalysts for building relations among people and with land. And that from that emerges this greater sense of community. So that really lies at the heart of my work and my interest, is this intimate relationship between community and food. And that's what comes back to, from that connection between community and food, the importance of local food systems, the types of relations that can be fostered through local food systems in terms of knowing your farmer better. And as I said, indirectly, well, if you grow your own food, it's you get the intimate connection to the land and the soil you're working with. But through the farmer that you get to meet and know at the farmer's market, you start to appreciate more of the immediate environment around you and the capacity and capabilities of actually growing food within your region. So to me, it packages around this. I guess I can link community, food, agriculture, and land into the reasons why I am interested in why I do study farmers markets.
You know, when I moved out to BC, I really felt a deeper connection to the land. We are very reliant on it, but it's also a struggle sometimes with all the flooding and the fires and avalanches. We didn't have that sort of thing in Ontario. And I felt a much deeper interconnectedness with the people, that we're all going to try really hard to ensure that everybody gets through these things. And you see that at farmers markets. People want to succeed. They want to survive. They want to thrive together. There is a huge knittedness of community in BC that I don't know if I've ever experienced that anywhere else. And I love that people become passionate about that with each other. I mean, I have forged much stronger relationships professionally, personally. I volunteer a lot of my time because I want to see things succeed. And I think you're right. I think over food, you see it much more clearly. I love BC for that.
Yeah, I grew up in the suburbs of Toronto, so it's definitely a different lifestyle. But so now, having lived in here in Prince George for, I think it's 18 years now, definitely I see those things here in Prince George that you've just been describing.
In my role as a research associate, I was asked to collect these statistics of the northern BC farmers markets, as I said, and you designed several surveys used to collect these statistics. So let's go over some of those to understand what you were collecting and why. Let's go back to the DOT survey. How does that one work?
Yeah, we've mentioned it a few times, but haven't really described it.
I love it. I felt like I was in kindergarten whenever I pulled that one out, and people, their eyes would get big and they'd get so excited about doing it.
Yeah, for the benefit of the listeners, we refer to it as DOT survey. You and I have immediate images of what that means, but we call it a DOT survey because it's based on using flip charts and flip chart stands or easel stands at the farmer's market itself. So we set up these stands at the markets and post questions on them on large sheets of paper and have categories. And we give people sticky dots in order to help answer the questions. So that's why we call it the DOT survey. It's really centered on dots. And I'll go back to 2006. You asked me, and I've talked about where this idea came from. And it was a workshop down in Oregon. And I got exposed to it and saw the DOT working in person. I remember liking it, but I don't think I really questioned whether it was a good method or not. It's just the method that they use. And then I brought it forward and incorporated into the assessment that I was doing in BC in terms of just use their methods. It seemed to be working really well. But almost immediately, I was taken aback by how, as you were just describing, how much people enjoy playing with dots. And this year, I'd say it's different this year. I keep saying it's 11 years ago when I did it last. 11 years is a long time, but think of it in terms of technology now.
Yes.
It was difficult to actually find flip chart stands. We didn't use the old traditional flip chart stand because they're not even available anymore. And when was the last time you got to play with dots? It seems that isn't as common. Everything's electronic nowadays. You do online surveys. So I wouldn't call it nostalgia. That would be pushing it a little too much, but the opportunity to play with dots. I think it's being overwhelmed by some of the technology. So yeah, I definitely knew we were going to do dots this year, and that certainly proved true in terms of how much people enjoyed just putting dots on surveys beyond, well, it was to say that they want to help the farmers market. They're happy to participate in these, in this dot survey itself, but to have fun doing it is an added bonus, I think, for everyone.
I think so too. And we were hearing it between markets. People were coming up to us at our markets and saying, oh, I did this at another one. I can't wait to do it here. So it's memorable.
Yeah.
I think I should point out that all statistics collected are confidential. So while each market gets a preliminary report that identifies generally how their market impacts their community, there's nothing specific to tie the stats to a particular person or business. And all statistics collected go into a final provincial report that offers general stats on each region. Confidentiality matters a lot, doesn't it?
It does. And within research, there's always a difference between anonymity and confidentiality. Anonymity means that we actually have no idea who answered the questions. For the DOT survey, there is some compromise. It's not 100% confidential in terms of you can see the person. If you were at the market on that particular day and standing around the stands, you can see who is putting their dots where. And if you know the person, now you know. It's no longer confidential. But yeah, that's just a point of clarification. But your other point from the reports side, yes, we do not identify anyone. Nothing we provide ties back to any particular person. And that's the reason for that, is to just create more space, a sense of comfort that people can provide accurate, honest comments as best as possible, given the way we ask questions. But the one area where we're most concerned is when we're talking to those businesses that are located adjacent to markets. We actually don't provide results from those surveys on a market-by-market basis, as same as the shopper surveys. We don't do those either in terms of, there's such small numbers. It might be 3, 5, maybe 10, whatever it is, both for businesses and shoppers, to complete these longer, more detailed surveys. And in those surveys, we're asking more personal information and more private information. So if we presented those for an individual market, it's possible that someone could easily guess or identify a particular business, or if they saw someone being interviewed, they might know that person. Right. So we only report on shopper surveys, these longer version surveys, the one-on-one surveys for both shoppers and businesses. We aggregate them for the whole province and provide them only within the provincial report, only to maintain this confidentiality and for their benefit.
People were a lot more willing to give us an honest answer when they knew that it was confidential.
Yeah. And again, some people might have been uncomfortable or maybe had a second thought about putting dots on so others could see them, and they probably chose not to participate in the study. But overall, they're pretty easy questions, and they're not that intrusive. So I think, yeah, most people would found it comfortable, even though others could watch them putting their dots on the flip charts.
Did you hear from other research associates that there was a challenge? I think it was part of the pandemic. We had to convince several people to do the dots, even to do any of the surveys. Occasionally you'd hear, well, you know, we don't trust the government anymore, or what are you doing with these surveys? I think there is a direct correlation between the pandemic, what happened then, and people's ability to trust.
Yeah, the pandemic did affect the survey, the whole research design, in different ways. We didn't ask anything specifically about the impacts of COVID, so it wasn't our purpose. But as you said, it shows up in a lot of different ways. And you also asked earlier about what some early numbers show. One that just comes to my mind is that it appears that we had a lower participation rate on a market by market basis and overall in terms of the number of people who were willing to participate in the DOT survey. The numbers were down compared to 2012. And I don't know the exact reason for that, but it's legitimate to keep asking the same question in terms of, is that the effect of the pandemic? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it's a legitimate question, and there are impacts that might be associated with that, but I don't think we'll know for sure.
I noticed that with the Skeena Valley Farmers Market, they showed me their preliminary report from 2012. And I was shocked to see that the numbers were down this year from what they got that year. So that's that underscores what you just said, because I couldn't figure that out at all. Okay, we both mentioned, I think, that there were four questions that we asked at virtually every farmer's market in BC. So what were the four questions? And like, how did you decide these?
Well, I came up with the questions. They seemed, well, it was easy in terms of some of them are just absolutely essential to do the economic benefit estimates. So we need to know how much people spend at farmer's markets. So that's the primary question. And the single most important question. So that's, I would say, put that one in the obvious category from my perspective. And the other one, we did want to get a sense of how much people were the benefit of the farmers market to nearby businesses. So a secondary question, but equally important, was just to ask if how much people spend at additional businesses while shopping that day. So that takes care of two in terms of how much do you spend at the market, how much do you spend at additional or nearby businesses. There's two other questions that are more related to marketing and getting to know customers better. So those ones, two questions were, how often do you visit the farmers market and when did you start coming to the farmers market? These two I would package under the kind of the brand of loyalty. And because they're really essential questions from a farmer's market perspective. I've talked to vendors a lot and they recognize a lot of their customers, but there's always new customers as well. So having the numbers to quantify that is critically important for the market to understand its customers. So yeah, how long you've been coming and how often do you visit? Just really speak to the importance of the farmer's market to those individual shoppers. And then it helps from a market perspective, it helps them to understand how the shopping at a farmer's market fits within their broader shopping patterns of everyone.
So I have a couple of anecdotal stories to tell you about these four questions. The first one is, invariably, there would be a handful of people who would come back. They would do the dot survey, then they'd go and do their shopping, and then they'd come rushing back and they'd say, I need to change the placement of my dot for the how much did I plan to spend, because I spent more than I thought I would. And sometimes the dot won't move, right? It's stuck on there like glue, so it's not moving. But they would desperately want to get this accurate, which was really funny. And then
and we've seen that since 2006. Yeah, one of the funnier anecdotes from the study.
And then I saw this specifically on Haida Gwaii, right? It's a tourist destination. And they probably saw this a lot at the Vancouver Island markets, too. It's a tourist destination is probably going to see this, where people come, they live in this destination for a month, a couple of months. And so they somehow stop considering themselves a tourist. But that's not their permanent residence. And you don't want to interfere too much with people while they're doing the survey, but it really messes with the statistics, with the results, if people are coming at it from different places. And I would see a lot of yellow dots in the, how often do you visit the farmer's market every week? And I think, well, they must have made a mistake. And then you get talking to them and you realize, well, you know, they're a day tripper. They're, for instance, in Smithers, some of them are coming from Terrace, which is a 2.5 hour drive, and they come almost every week while they're coming for a specific vendor. And I found that fascinating that people categorize themselves differently depending on what their situation is. And it's not maybe what the way I would have categorized it.
Yeah, and I'll emphasize the point you made in terms of we don't want to interfere with people too much when they're doing the dot survey. It's meant to be really, really quick, which means really, really convenient and simple. One thing we haven't mentioned, I don't believe so far, so it's worth clarifying another point. You just mentioned yellow dots, and I don't think I've talked about that yet. Right. But for all of the dot surveys, all the flip chart surveys, we asked people if they were a tourist or day tripper versus someone who's from the area itself. And I can go into the reasons why we did that later, but the as you were pointing out, it's not always obvious in terms of who's a tourist and who isn't a tourist, because in areas where there are great distances, people will travel a long distance and they'll come to do their regular shopping and always visit the market. So we did try to identify, it's almost, yeah, there's different categories, but mostly we tried to focus on tourists was our primary interest, and everyone who identified as a tourist then got the yellow dot. And that allowed us to be able to count all the dots afterwards and separate the yellow dots, meaning tourists, from the other results, and could focus on them. But yeah, this category of commuter, the ones who live away and then do a big distance, I think what we tried to capture was someone who made a special trip in to visit the farmer's market. And we associated them more closely with the conventional idea of tourists.
I always found that interesting in Smithers when somebody came in from another community that has their own farmer's market, but they also come into Smithers. They're making a special trip, and that increases the value of the market, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then there was a fifth question that we offered to each market. How did that work? I really love that you gave them this opportunity.
Yeah, and it's one of those, it was now a long time ago when I came up with that idea, but as a general principle, when I do research, I want to make sure it's not just for my benefit. I certainly did this research because I was interested in it, but I knew that individual farmers markets and the BC Association of Farmers Markets and the Ministry of Agriculture, everyone was interested to know what these big provincial results would be, as well as the individual markets wanted to see their own results as well. So, and they did use that information to talk to their local governments and demonstrating their value. But I also wanted to make sure that through these flip chart surveys, the dot surveys, as we're calling them, wanted to make sure that just added one more element to help farmers markets make it feel like it's their survey as well. So just adding a fifth question and giving them the choice was certainly important to make it a more valuable experience for them as well, because it takes time and effort on their part to accept us coming in, and they do provide volunteers. So definitely wanted to make sure it was a mutually beneficial process.
You're a falling star, you're the getaway car, you're the line in the sand when I go too far, you're the swimming pool on an August day, and you're the perfect thing to say. And you play it cold, but it's kinda cute. Oh, when you smile at me, you know exactly what you do. Baby, don't pretend that you don't know it's true, 'cause you can see it when I look at you. And in this crazy life, and through these crazy times, it's you, it's you. You make me sing your every line, your every word, your everything. You're a carousel, you're a wishing well, and you light me up when you ring my bell. You're a mystery, you're from outer space, you're every minute of my everyday. And I can't believe that I'm your man, and I get to kiss you, baby, just because I can. Whatever comes our way, I will see it through, and you know that's what our love can do. And in this crazy life, and through these crazy times, it's you.
That's it for the cookie jar this week. My guest today was Dr. Dave Connell, a UNBC professor who loves building community around local food with the knittedness of community. Tune in next week to hear part two of this episode, when Dave and I will discuss some of the other surveys we took and what we're hoping to learn from them. The takeaway today is to get out there and support your local farmers market. The Cookie Jar is produced by Christine Bruce, with music by Elijah Larson, aired through CICK 93.9 FM in Smithers, BC. Available anytime at smithersradio.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. Thanks for the visit. For more on Dave Connell, visit unbc.ca/David-Connell. CONNELL. To follow the results of the BC Farmers Market Benefits Study, visit bcfarmersmarket.org. And if you want to know what's happening each week with us, you can find us on Facebook at the Cookie Jar on CSEK. Dave and I will see you next week.